You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Back in 1994, right after my son Cody was born, I started to have severe numbness and weakness in my right arm to the point where I was actually afraid that I was going to drop my own son and possibly even stop working as a sports medicine specialist. Now, a neurologist thought I had multiple sclerosis and wanted me to get a whole bunch of tests, including an MRI and a spinal tap. Now, at the moment, you know, I was under a lot of stress of a newborn. I just couldn't handle going and getting all these stuff done, but I was able to dig deeper and take a look at what the science has been showing, what could be the cause of my numbness and weakness in my entire right arm. And I found that one of the possibilities could be from mercury toxicity, you know, being one of the environmental triggers. Now, that actually really resonated with me because during my whole pregnancy, I ate a ton of tuna fish pretty much every day for lunch. And I even had a cracked amalgam filling in my mouth as well that I didn't fix. Now, I immediately, after reading that, I went into a seafood-free diet. And then I got the metals out of my mouth. And sure enough, amazingly, my MS-like symptoms went away within a few weeks. Now, today, we have one of the leading experts in multiple sclerosis, Dr. Barry Singer. He is the medical director and founder of the MS Center for Innovations in Care, one of the largest comprehensive care multiple sclerosis centers in the Midwest. He is also the board of directors of the Multiple Sclerosis Association of America and has been an investigator in more than 25 clinical trials focused on new multiple sclerosis treatment. Wow, I'm so excited to have you here on Wellness for Life, Dr. Singer. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Dr. Suzanne. It's a pleasure to be here and try to educate your listeners about MS.
Yes, we really need to know more because this is definitely a condition that has been plaguing America, you know, one of those autoimmune conditions. And so we want to learn more about it. I'd like to just ask the first question. What is multiple sclerosis?
Yeah, so MS is a disease in which the immune system turns against itself. And so like many autoimmune diseases, the immune system goes after the body instead of leaving the body alone. And specifically what happens in MS is the immune cells attack the coating of the nerves in the brain and spinal cord. That coating is called myelin and helps nerves function. So if you hit if your immune system attacks the myelin, messages don't get through very well.
Well, if that's the case, then let's go on to a little bit of the symptoms. You know, once the myelin gets attacked by your own immune factors and your own immunity, then what are the symptoms that people... Now, I'm not saying I had MS. Let me just be clear about that. But I, when the neurologist said, well, this looks like MS, you know, that's what you end up getting scared about. But let's look at some of the symptoms because I had numbness and tingling and weakness in my entire right arm. I couldn't use it.
Well, That, Suzanne, is definitely consistent with the symptoms of MS. So some people have numbness is the first sign. So maybe numbness on your entire side of one side of your face. So numbness on your face, arm, and leg on one side. Another common form of numbness would be in your toes. It kind of ascends, comes up your legs into your thighs and into the pelvis or even up to your hands. So on both sides of the body. So that can be a first sign. Other people present with problems with vision. So when they look out, they'll have blurred vision out of one eye. It may worsen over a few days with pain with eye movement, and then get better over a week or two. Other symptoms can be double vision, vertigo, rim spinning round and round. Not like when you just change positions, but vertigo, spinning sensations that last for days, bad balance. So these are all common symptoms. The number one symptom actually of MS is fatigue. So some people that have severe fatigue for a couple of years before they even develop other neurologic symptoms that make it suspicious for MS. Bladder problems can be an issue, bladder urgency, got to run to the bathroom, weakness. And so these are all various symptoms of MS.
Well, you're saying something very interesting. You said fatigue. That may be something that you experience way ahead, like years ahead of time. So that maybe, do you think that you can actually diagnose or I should say, you can diagnose a condition of possibly MS way ahead of time and fix it even sooner? For instance, what is the best way to diagnose MS?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. I mean, really, we unfortunately, most people present with only three symptoms kind of draw to the diagnosis of MS. So it's usually numbness in both legs or both arms, kind of sometimes make MS likely, a visual loss in one eye, which we call optic neuritis, or an attack in the brainstem, which causes double vision, vertigo, balance problems. But there are some subtle symptoms that can happen before. So what to diagnose it, if you're having unusual fatigue or numbness or bladder issues, then it is important to see your doctor. And usually the first step is an MRI scan. So an MRI scan of the brain helps us find spots in the brain we call lesions, and that's very typical of the inflammation. Some people have spots in the spinal cord as well, in the neck and the mid-back. The low back, actually, the spinal cord ends in the mid-back, so there's no spinal cord in the low back. So if you do an MRI of your lumbar spine, you're not going to find the MS. So we do MRI imaging. It's very important. We do blood tests to rule out other diagnoses. And then sometimes we do a spinal tap. So about 90% of people with MS have abnormal spinal fluid. So we look for antibodies in the spinal fluid, and that can help us confirm a diagnosis if we're not sure why people are having their neurologic symptoms.
You mentioned about lesions in the brain, and I treat all forms of chronic illnesses, including neurological cases, because they want me to help them with their nutritional lifestyle habits and get them feeling healthier and stronger, which then, of course, will support their condition. But what they do is they bring in their MRI scans to me, and we find obviously what they're looking at are the white matter lesions. Can you explain a little bit about what's going on in that lesion? Why is that happening? Or I should say, what is causing that to happen, these white matter lesions?
Right. So what we see is in the white matter of the brain, deep in the brain, we see areas where there's direct inflammation. So the inflammation will cause damage to the coating of the nerves or myelin. So we can actually see that on the MRI scan. So we'll see areas of white matter spots. And so some people have a few, some people have a lot. And that really helps us with the diagnosis of MS. Now, when you age, as we all age, and you get into 50 or older, we all get a few white matter spots due to blockage of little blood vessels. So if you got hypertension or smoke, you may start to get some white matter spots in your late 40s, early 50s. And so sometimes it's not clear, are the spots MS-like? But there's a certain pattern that we look for with MS. So a neurologist would be able to look for that pattern that makes it much more suggestive of MS. But people in their 20s and 30s, early 40s really shouldn't have spots in the brain. So we see this active inflammation going on in the brain, and that really lets us know the signs of MS.
Right. Are there any genetic factors that put us in a position that we actually may have more symptomatology or can actually get MS?
Yes. Well, there's been a whole human genome project and kind of looked at what changes in the DNA of people with MS separates them from people that don't have MS. And interestingly, some of the changes in the DNA are very similar to other people with other autoimmune disease, such as celiac disease and Crohn's disease, which is inflammation in the bowel. So it's actually very similar to other autoimmune disease people with MS. If you have MS, there's always a concern, what's going to happen with my children? And so a daughter would have about a 5% risk of MS, and a son only 1 to 3%. So it's not strongly genetic, but there's definitely a genetic risk. If one twin has MS, the identical twin has about a third chance of getting MS. So there's some genetic basis.
And when you say genetic, are there specific genes that are clear-cut? For instance, with celiac, there's a specific gene that you look for. How about for MS?
Yes, so there's no specific gene. So it's a pattern of a number of different genes combined together might make you more susceptible, but no specific genetic test that we can do and say, oh, you're going to be high risk for developing MS.
Right, right. There's also information about how lack of sunlight and low vitamin D levels. What is your take on the relationship with MS?
Yeah, so vitamin D is really, really fascinating. We know from military recruits that people that enter the military and developed MS over time, we went back and looked at their baseline labs, and those people that developed MS had low vitamin D. And we've now seen evidence that low vitamin D can increase your risk of having new attacks of MS and also new MRI activity. So low vitamin D seems to make you more susceptible for more disease activity. The other risk factors for developing MS is one is smoking. So smoking before age 17 increases your risk of getting MS. And if you already have MS and you smoke, it makes you much more susceptible not only to physical disability, but we just had a big study that created more cognitive problems. So smoking actually causes more disability with MS. Childhood obesity is a trigger. Yeah, so childhood obesity is a trigger for MS, and exposure to the Epstein-Barr virus. There was a big German study just came out of this global MS meeting that we had, and almost everyone with MS has been exposed to the Epstein-Barr virus, which is mono.
Right. I find in my practice that human herpes 6, HHV-6, is also a component. Do you see that too?
Not with MS. People have been looking because we're always looking, how can we, can we vaccinate people and prevent them from getting MS? But the only one that we've seen is Epstein-Barr virus. But the problem is the vast majority of people out there, even without MS, have been exposed to Epstein-Barr virus. It just seems to be a higher percentage of people who actually have MS that's been exposed. But so far, we haven't been able to find a specific virus.
Yeah, besides Epstein-Barr being a component there. You mentioned about smoking. Does it matter what kind of herb you're smoking? Does it matter if it's the tobacco or marijuana or both?
Well, tobacco is the one that I'm mentioning. So tobacco is the one that causes an increased risk. Cannabinoids actually been studied in MS in a few different ways. Cannabinoids have been, there was a study that was done in England to see if it could slow down the progression of MS, to see if it could slow down disability progression. And there was a trial that was done and unfortunately didn't slow down the actual disease. But cannabinoid spray is available in Europe, and it can help with the stiffness or cramping of the legs, so what we call spasticity or the stiffness of the legs, and also can potentially help with pain. So depending on what state you're in, depending on where you are in the United States, cannabinoids might be a benefit.
I use, in my practice, we use CBD oil. It's from hemp oil, so there's no psychotropics. I'm talking about THC in it. And it really helps patients with MS to help them go to sleep. Often they have trouble. They have a lot of anxiety, obviously, from having the condition, but it helps them relax and go to sleep. And they say that it reduces their inflammatory any areas that they do have pain, as you're saying, it really does work for that too.
Yeah, we tend to, a lot of patients with MS do get cramping and stiffness at night. Where I'm in Missouri, where we don't have access to medical marijuana or THC, cannabinoid compounds. So, but we do use muscle relaxants. So, baclofen, tizanidine can be very useful in helping to prevent that stiffness or cramping. So, that can really help relax people so they can sleep through the night.
Yeah, that's great. Earlier, I mentioned that in the intro, I talked about mercury toxicity at least for my body. Are there other environmental risk factors? You did mention the possibility of the smoking, but anything else, any other chemicals or toxicants we need to look out for?
Well, actually not. We've kind of been looking to see what other environmental factors besides the, you know, the smoking, the Epstein-Barr virus, the those kind of symptoms, those kind of triggers, environmental triggers. But we haven't found, people have looked at different salt diets to see if high salt diet makes you at increased risk, but we still haven't found any specific chemical that will trigger MS. So unfortunately, we can't find anything in the environment otherwise that we could try to modify, but we're working on it.
That's great. That's great. Oh, moving on to, I'd like to know, what are your treatments that you work with? You have one of the largest MS centers in this country. What do you do that makes it so much better for your patients?
Well, it's, the treatments have come a long, long way. When I was first in practice, we had, you know, we had a few self-injected medications that you inject under the skin, and some people have done beautifully on these long-term, and they're very safe. But, you know, a lot of my patients were like, doc, you know, I'm tired of doing shots. Can you get me a pill? So for over 20 years, I've been working on oral medications, and we have three oral medications. We may soon have a fourth or a fifth. So these are medications that can change the disease course. And so these medications prevent new relapses, so which are attacks of MS that might last a couple weeks or a few months. We prevent disability by being on the medication, so the people that are on treatment are less likely to have progression of disability. And they're really robust on stopping new MRI activity. Some of them prevent over 80% of the spots forming on the brain, the lesions on the brain. So the medications have come a long way. And now we have three IV treatments that are infrequent, either once a month, once every 6 months, or even once a year. And these medications dramatically change the disease course and really shut down new activity. So we have an array of treatments. So the advantage now is, you know, and I've been in practice for about 19 years, and so some of my patients who go on treatment early in their disease course and consistently take medication have done really, really well. We do see people that have, you know, got diagnosed later, didn't have access to treatment, who have sustained significant disability over time, may have wheelchairs or problems with cognitive impairment. But most people do really, really well now with consistently taking medication long term.
So what sounds to me is that, you know, your treatments, I mean, like you say, a long way, all the different types that you do. And then what I'd like to know is that, can people completely arrest their symptomatology? I'm not going to say they're cured of MS, but can you say that it's completely in remission?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, the inflammation can be going on under the radar, so we can't see it all on MRI. So there can be some progression, even though that we don't see it on the MRI. But we've come dramatically. One of the older drugs, injected medication underneath the skin, was compared. We did the trials on it compared to this new IV treatment that's once every 6 months. Well, the old drug prevented about 80% of the spots on the brain. The new drug is 98% better than the old drug. So we've come, we have tremendous amount of power now with our agents to really control the disease. And some people need a higher power drug and some people need a milder drug. But we really can keep the disease in check for the vast majority of people as long as they consistently take medications. Now, all these medications have side effects and risk, and it's really important that you sit down and talk to your healthcare provider about the options. But there are people with MS that are out there, they're really not taking anything. And, you know, they're working on exercise and diet, which is important, but we also want to prevent the cognitive and physical disability that come from the disease. And we have all these array of different treatment options to help people keep their goals, you know, and be able to do all those things that they love to do.
Right, right. And I mean, I'm a natural medicine doctor. So what I do is I, with patients come in and they've got their own, we work really well together, and I've helped them with their lifestyle, their exercise, and supplementation to help them reduce more inflammation in their body, and doing it naturally through food and eating. Do you at your center also implement that? Dale Bredesen, who is really big in the Alzheimer's world, he incorporates all of the lifestyle and the, you know, daily activity as well as food changes and all that into his programs. How about you?
Oh, definitely, definitely. So every patient that comes in, we talk about the whole array of wellness. So we talk about exercise, you know, what's the game plan? And everybody has very different levels of disability. Some people, they have mobility issues. You know, recumbent bike's great, so they work on exercise, and we have a lot of our patients' balance is an issue. So we do yoga, swimming therapy, aqua therapy. So we kind of work within each individual patient to try to find a great regimen that works for them and makes them feel positive about themselves. And then we work on diet, which is important. So to be fit, you have this challenge in front of you. MS is going to be there. So we want to help our patients be in the best shape that they can. And I've had people, it's amazing, people have lost over 100 pounds since they were diagnosed with MS. Their whole family's eating better. So they, you know, you don't take your health for it, you know, you start to take your health very seriously, and you start focusing on wellness. And I think that's really important. I think that gets lost a lot of times in visits. And so that's one of the things that I think is extremely critical is work with patients and come up with positive ways to influence the wellness as they go forward and fight this disease.
All right. I'm a big believer that, you know, do everything that really works. And it sounds to me with the science and all the new treatments that's are out with MS in combination, the holistic, as well as when you do need it, because you're suffering quickly. You know, sometimes that's what you need is you got to stop and arrest the progression of this disease, which then asks, you know, I'd like to ask you, what is the prognosis for these people who are living with MS? What do you feel now that you've been studying for so long? What can happen?
Well, the prognosis is definitely good, particularly those patients that are getting diagnosed now. And even the people that have been diagnosed in the past 15, 20 years, it's so much better than the people that did not have treatment. Before 1993, there was no treatment. So I see people in their 70s that really had one attack after another attack, and the relapses were not well controlled and ended up having significant disability. But the people that are diagnosed now or past 10, 15 years have had access to treatment, and it just really changes their whole disease course. The life expectancy from MS is within 5 years of anybody else. So the main thing is we want to try to prevent disability and try to prevent the long-term complications from disability. So we have a lot of success, and I think just having this array of treatments is very, very important. The key is getting diagnosed as soon as possible. Sometimes we see delays where, you know, it's very important if you're having these symptoms, numbness, vision problems, balance problems, to advocate for yourself, to get in and get diagnosed as soon as you can, and then go on treatment as soon as you can. And so that changes the whole disease course. And we've seen that over and over in studies. So we want to get people, you know, on the right road early.
I love what you're saying. So your website of your center is called mslivingwell.org. Is that correct?
That's correct. So mslivingwell.org, I started about over a decade ago because I think people were very interested. People living with MS wanted information and direct, unfiltered information. And there was very little available, some from the medications and some from some of the advocacy groups, including the MSAA, but back then there wasn't a lot. So I like to give, from a physician's perspective, information on understanding your MRI, got videos, understanding the disease, treatment information, how to manage your symptoms, how to be diagnosed with MS. So a lot of really practical information with some great animated videos. And then the other website I have is out there is ICanWithMS.org. And on ICanWithMS.org is people can go in there and post their story about what they can do with MS and how MS doesn't define them and what they can do, what they're doing positive in their life and sharing their story with others.
I absolutely loved that website as well, Dr. Singer. I love the fact that you're creating a forum that people can be positive and think better of themselves. And like you said, it doesn't define them, but creating a community of supporters. And that's great. And I like the fact that it was all about photos, that you're sharing photos. Yeah, that's awesome. That was a great website. ICanWithMS.org. Dr. Singer, this, you know, we only have a couple more minutes left. I'd like to know what is like one research you're doing that can really blow this whole, future of MS up. Anything?
Really, yeah. My passion right now in the past few years is working on a way of repairing damage that's been done. So I mentioned the immune system is attacking myelin. Well, we have many drugs that affect the immune system to prevent new attacks. But what about people with disability? How can we repair the damage that's been done? And we know about 5 to 8% of the cells in the brain and spinal cord are immature cells that have the ability to become myelin-making cells. And so I'm working on doing trials on new compounds that may be able to turn on and make new myelin and actually repair the damage that's been done. In animal models, it works, and now we're doing human trials. So we're starting to work on a way to repair or restore function in those living with disability with MS. And I think it's a doable project. I think we talk about projects being, flying to Mars or flying to the moon. And I think this is a moon project that hopefully will come to fruition in the next few years.
And that's really
what I really want to do is try to help restore function for people living with disability with MS.
Well, that's wonderful. What a wonderful goal that you've got. But I actually think you're going to be able to do it, Dr. Singer. It sounds to me it's similar to like stem cell therapy, what you're saying.
Yeah, so stem cells been studied in MS. There's a couple approaches. So one's going through a whole bone marrow transplant, and there's some positive data going through hematopoietic bone marrow transplant. And some people do actually initially very, very well. But over time, unfortunately, it's not a cure for everybody. And so some people do have some breakthrough disease. It depends on where you get the bone marrow transplant. Some centers have had rare deaths, but that's part of the risk if you go that route. The other stem cells, mesenchymal stem cells, where you take them out of your fat or your blood and grow them with growth factors outside of the body and give them back to people. Those type of stem cell procedures, unfortunately, haven't been proven to work yet in MS, but might cost you $10,000 a pop. So, that needs some work, and there's not evidence that works yet. But the bone marrow transplants can work for people with highly aggressive disease, although we have so many now IV treatments that we may be able to get that controlled with more traditional treatment.
Right. Well, I think we all need to do is wait for your studies and what you're trying to do, which is to enhance other ways of repairing the tissues that's already starting damage. And then, of course, that can reverse a lot of the symptoms of MS. Thank you so much. This is great information. If you've learned anything from the show and you want to share that, please, if you have friends that have got MS, family members that have been diagnosed with it, please definitely listen to this, forward this show to them. And then of course you can go on iTunes and give us some of your feedback and what you've learned. Do connect with us on Instagram or Facebook. And if you need any guidance, want to dig deeper into your chronic health issues, I work on the phone, Skype, and FaceTime with people all around the world. And you can get that information on drsuzanne.com for my contact info. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.